Hello, I'm your host, Pamela Lau. Welcome to Real Life. I count it a privilege to host this conversation again. Through prayer this past year, I've discerned a deeper need surrounding the leadership crisis impacting each one of us. Starting in January of 2023, I released a new six-week series, and today is the sixth of that series of podcasts asking the question, what is Christian leadership? What makes this series unique and useful are the incredible friends I sit down with as I interview them about their roles or previous roles as leaders. We talk about all things leadership as a Christ follower, how leading impacts their personal relationships, a time when failure calls them to question walking away, and how to support leaders ahead of them and emerging leaders in their midst, even young children. So be sure to add the podcast to your phone or device so you don't miss an episode, and I will be announcing a new series of podcasts starting next week. So welcome to the show today, Ryan Doherty. Ryan's passion is helping people and teams grow. Ryan and his family are dear friends to our family, and his motto is that he believes if you love what you do and who you do it with, you can achieve amazing results. Ryan is a co-owner and principal partner at TG3, a strategy company that equips leaders and Christian institutions to get from where they are to where they want to be. Prior to his consulting and coaching work, he served for 20 years in enrollment and marketing at George Fox University outside Portland, Oregon. And he helped George Fox grow to unprecedented growth. So by developing people, creating a pipeline of accountable leaders, and implementing innovative strategy, the university experienced explosive enrollment gains beginning in 2013. So Ryan earned his undergraduate degree in psychology and a Master of Business Administration. He has two amazing kids, a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old, and his wife Meredith is pretty special. So welcome to the show today, Ryan Doherty. Hey, Ryan, it's great to see you today.
You too.
Thanks for being on the podcast. It's been long in coming.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
So, Ryan, before we jump in and I ask you all my questions, can you just give my listeners a little bit of background of what your current role is and what you're doing right now?
Yeah, so I am a co-owner in a consulting company that works exclusively with Christian higher ed called TG3. And it's our goal to grow leaders and grow enrollment, specifically in the Christian higher ed space, because our commitment is to that area. And we help people with hiring, strategy, and coaching. So we work at all levels of the organization and try to upskill leaders, but also focus on the areas that are to get them from where they are to where they want to be.
So would you call yourself primarily a coach, or is there another title?
Yeah, I oversee specifically our coaching area for enrollment, but my title is principal partner because I handle a lot of the back end of the business as well. So.
Okay. Well, and I also know that you have other important commitments in your life as well, right? I mean, you are married and you have two active children, right?
Yeah, yeah. I have two teenagers and they keep us busy and in good shape. I have a junior and a seventh grader. So we're excited for our son and daughter. And my wife is a high school teacher. So we stay pretty busy, but we like to spend time together as a family.
Yes. And my confession is that I've known you and Meredith probably for as long as we've been in Oregon, 22 years. Could that be possible?
Yeah, no, I actually remember when your husband came to interview for a job. So I feel, so I think ever since he showed up, I was in some sort of relationship with him or you guys.
Okay. Well, and truth be told, Meredith is one of my dearest friends. So, So there we go. We've got a lot of good things going along, but one of the, as I looked over at your, what you've done as a leader, and I consider you a leader, and I love that you say, you know, that your company is focusing on supporting Christian higher education. I know that we could get into so many different conversations about how that's changed and where it's going and all of that. Maybe we'll land there,
But I thought it'd be interesting for the listeners to hear like a moment in your life when you accepted, when you said yes to being in leadership, you know, kind of for the long haul. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, there are two moments that stick out for me, and I don't know if it fits being in the for the long haul, but late in my college experience, my undergrad experience, I had somebody encourage me to run for student government, which sounds a little weird, right? Because it's like, oh, student government, you know, what do you really do? But it was the first moment in my life where somebody had said, hey, I think you have leadership skills. And I wouldn't say I was a prototypical leader because I'm a little more introverted. And so at that time, it was kind of like, oh, the leaders that are out there are the ones that are more maybe extroverted and in that regard. So that moment was big because it got me into a position of leadership that showed me where my gaps were, essentially. But what I found in that was I really enjoyed helping other people and also helping drive results for an organization. So then fast forward a couple of years, I'm in probably my second or third year of employment after college. So I must've been 23, 24. And I was doing a job at my alma mater, recruiting students. So I was out traveling, bringing in students to the university. And we had a sudden departure in a key position on the operational side. And for some reason, I just thought, I think I could help us if I stepped in and just offered my support. And so I ended up jumping into that. And that was the first position where I had formal, what I would call management experience. And that began a journey of uncovering that I loved helping other people maximize what they were gifted with. And simultaneously, I loved helping people, organizations drive results. So I'm kind of this like two sides of the coin. I'm very competitive. I like to get results, but I also want people to experience something that maximizes their giftings. So
I love hearing that you just said that when you're 22 or 23 years old and you wanted to help people, you weren't thinking then at the time, oh, I want a better title.
No. And like, maybe this is bad to admit, but I was never aspirational for a title. Like that has never been
not a bad thing to admit.
Yeah. So man, maybe it's the way I was raised. I'm a middle child. I'm one of seven kids in my family. And right. So I always felt like I wanted to give people a better experience than maybe what I had even. Like, so if I was in a role and I thought there's another way I could do that, I want to help somebody figure that out. And I think there's always, I kind of have this thought in my mind around anytime you find an area of need, there's an opportunity to lead, right? So, and in this case, I didn't expect to go to work one day and say, hey, I could help manage the database and oversee our operations. But there was a need that cropped up that would help the team move forward. And I had some skills in that area because of my schooling. And I just said, hey, I think I could help. And that led to me having a career in leadership and management.
And that was the first time you had the title, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think director of systems or something like that. And it wasn't something that I had angled for or aspired towards.
Okay. It was more organic. Again, I love that. Kind of like, I know that there's a book that Roger Parrott just put out about opportunity leadership. It sounds like that.
Yeah.
What you're, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So then obviously I'm going to assume you had good experiences. And so you kept saying yes, as things came along. Was that what happened? How did you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I did end up moving up pretty quickly. So I became the director of the office at 27, I think. And I think I became a vice president at the university at 37, which feels like a long time to me. But when you look at it in hindsight, you're like, okay, that's a pretty limited experience to get into those roles. And I think part of what it was is that my goal was always to develop people, empower them to do the best work they could do towards a shared vision and goal for our organization. And that just was the way I was wired from the first leadership role I took to everyone I stepped into. And I don't think I think it was about that thing I said earlier, when there was an area of need that I saw that I had giftings for, I was able to just offer my support. And then leaders above me were able to acknowledge that and say, let's move you into a position where you can actually do this formally. And I would even tell people who are new years later, and they'd say, well, how can I move up in the organization? I would just say, do great work in the position you're in and step up when there's opportunity.
That's great advice.
Yeah. So, and that to me, it's about motivation. Like, was I motivated to be, you know, a VP at a certain age? Was I motivated? Not really. I was motivated for helping people and delivering results.
Yeah, that's good. It's pretty unusual as well to know that that was your mindset. But you clearly must have had people around you who modeled that for you, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I had my first boss was he allowed me to be myself. You know, that was really important. And he offered me the opportunity to step into roles of leadership that maybe were just outside of my comfort zone, which I think is important, challenge, growth and challenge. Mm-hmm. But I think in my life, in my personal life, I had seen leadership modeled from the time I was young in the home, through my grandparents. My dad was a pastor. And so I saw how he led a small community church. And it was very much about the relationships and about the shared work that they did together. And so I think that became kind of the way I viewed leadership. And I wasn't, you know, in high school, I played a lot of sports. So I wasn't a formal, like I wasn't in student government or any of that. But when I got to college, there were people, employees that really helped contribute to my vision of myself as something more than just an individual employee or contributor.
Okay, that's really good. We're going to get a little bit later on into what it looks like to be a leader who's a follower of Jesus. And so maybe we can tie back into what Absolutely. You saw in your parents' lives. So, I mean, the reality of being a human being in life is that you have other aspects to life besides the leadership responsibilities. So how has being a married man with children worked well for you when you worked as an executive leader and, you know, talk about the shifting to a full-time consultant?
Yeah. So, I mean, life is about priorities, right? So, and it has its ups and downs. I think if in a different life, I could be a workaholic. That's one of the things I know.
Talk about that for a second.
Yeah. So like when I have a responsibility, I am overly responsible. Let's put it that way, which is partly why I think I probably moved up quickly is I would take on more. And early in my career, I wasn't married. I didn't get married until I was 25. And so I could work a certain way. Mm-hmm. I think the key for me was as soon as I got married and then as soon as we had our first child, it was about how do I create healthy boundaries and as much as possible, because there are certain seasons when you're in levels of executive leadership where you're going to be busy, but it was about prioritizing not just my time, but my mind, right? So my biggest struggle still to this day would be bringing my work home in my mind.
In my mind.
And so the key that I had to do, and I saw this model by one of my former bosses, was there was set time for set work, right? So here's the time we're going to do this. We're going to do it really well right now. We're going to do everything we can to get it done. And then when it's time to go and have lunch with the family or dinner with the family or be home with the family, we're going to do that. Now, culture doesn't always allow you to do that, especially if you're in an environment where everybody's always on call. But for me, that was really important to see modeled early in my career, because like I said, my disposition was towards, let's just keep working to get the results. Mm-hmm. And then as I had kids and as they got older, you know, I wanted to prioritize my relationship with my wife and my kids and the investment I was making there.
So just go with me for just a second here.
Yeah.
How do you define the word responsibility? I know. Yeah. Well, because I have a reason for asking that.
Yeah. Well, I think anything that has been given to your care, right? So this is partly why I would say I could be a workaholic is when you get into a level of leadership, when you feel like everything's your responsibility, then it can be overwhelming. And so, but what about personal responsibility? What does it mean to be a father and a husband and a friend and a son and a brother? Like, what do those things look like? So you almost have to create some sort of way to weight those in your mind and say, what, and this is where I would say, but that's what priorities are. Priorities are a weighting of your responsibilities. W-E-I-G-H-T.
That's good.
Right. So if I weight my responsibilities a certain way, and even in my coaching job right now, I'll ask people what's the most important thing to them. And then when they do a time log, it's not even, they don't even line up. Right.
Oh, interesting. Can you give an example?
Yeah. So let's say I say the most important thing in my life is my physical well-being, and then my, you know, my work, and then my, you know, gardening, whatever. Let's just say that.
Right.
But then when you look at how, where your time goes.
Yeah.
And you see, well, actually you're at work 90% of the time. And then when you're home, you're not doing any physical exercise and your garden is, you know, overrun with weeds. So that type of idea is like, that creates dissonance in us, because if I say I want this, but then I do this, we know that, like, intrinsically, we know that we're not doing
it. That's where that dissonance comes from.
That's where dissonance comes from. So I think with, to live an integrous life, integrity, the root word of integrity is whole, right? Mm-hmm. How do we actually create a way that we are living the way we want to live according to the priorities that we say are important?
Okay, so that happened to you as that became more real to you as your family grew, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I, you know, I had my wife and I, our first son had some pretty significant health trauma at the beginning. So he was in the NICU for 6 weeks, and trauma has a way of rewiring your brain for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I think in that moment, it was pretty clear to me that, and I had a great employer at that time, so I was able to be with my wife and son. That allowed me to actually go, you know, like, if I don't quite succeed at work at the level I expect myself to, but I succeed at home in a way that my family needs me to, isn't that better? And
could you live with that, with the sense of responsibility you have about work?
Yeah, because I think I was forced to, right? So like, this is why I would say I could be a workaholic, is I could always do more to deliver more what I perceive to be more responsible or deliver more value. And that can be a very dangerous mindset, because it eliminates all the other options on the table for how you could prioritize your time.
So how did this change when you haven't really talked about the shift?
Yeah. So
talk about that for just a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, I made a shift in 2020 to leaving my vice president job and becoming a full-time coaching consultant. And that has changed my time dramatically, because my work is radically different and my time is different. So it isn't any less work, right? But it allows me to actually be able to be present in different times of the day, or to, like, I go to chapel at my kids' private school every Wednesday. And for me, that's really important, because I want them to see that I'm investing in their spiritual development and I'm investing in their lives. So it's allowed me to actually take a little bit more ownership. Whereas in my old job, culture had some expectations for how you would show up and how you wouldn't show up. Some of those healthy, some of those not.
Okay, you just said culture had expectations. So yeah. Give an example of an unhealthy cultural expectation in the old job.
Yeah, well, and I think this is true of most places I've worked with in higher ed, is time. It's almost about time versus outcomes. So meaning there's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of, at certain seasons, whether it's board meeting season or those sort of things, you're going to be spending a lot of time doing things. And time is almost the currency, right? How much time have you put into these things? And what my job now allows me to do is say, it isn't the time that I put in, it's the value that I produce for the clients that have hired me, or and the coaches that I'm working with. So in the old job, I think there was always more to be done. And that's not untrue for me today, but I think I can make more of my own decisions about, like, how do I want to live?
How do I want to live? But you're still doing the same amount of work. So what's changed? There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, well, I think I have more control over my where I think value lies, right? So this is where, you know, culture is the attitudes and beliefs and behaviors of an organization or a family or whatever. So if you're in a culture that says, you know, if you're not showing up to all these things, then that's not, you're not working hard enough.
Right.
Or if you're not, if you don't go to this meeting, then you don't think this is important. Well, I even got to the point in my old work where I was like, I think if I go to every one of those meetings, I'm robbing somebody else of an opportunity to grow their own leadership.
That's a good way. That's a twist on it.
Yeah. And I actually, even one of my goals towards the end of my time was to help develop another executive level leader. And I even talked with her about that. Like, this is what can I do to help you get prepared for whatever you have down the road? And it wasn't necessarily because I was planning to leave. That wasn't a plan I had. But I, because again, I'm about development, I thought, well, if I take all these things, then I'm also taking the opportunity from somebody else to learn and grow into an area that would benefit her down the road.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So compare and contrast just quickly for listeners. What was the pro of being in an organization like you were in old job? Because we're hearing the pros of being at home. And what's the downside of being in that culture? Just if you could do a quick compare and contrast.
Yeah, I mean, I love the community aspect of my previous work. I think there's something about being a part of a team, a broader team, a larger, medium-sized organization. Mm-hmm. I think on a pragmatic side, there is things that people did that I didn't have to do that now, because I'm running the company, I have to do. And so I think that there isn't any less work, like I said, but it's the way I have a bit more control and authority. And actually, it's not control. It's more of, I get to design my life the way I think
autonomy.
It's best. Yes. But also, like, I can create the value and opportunity by the way I go about my work. Versus in the past, it's even, people think about salary a lot too. Like, oh, how could I leave a set salary and move to something where I have to go get my own work? And it's like, that's a big deal. But when you think about it, at a work job like that, the ceiling is pretty high, or the floor is pretty high in terms of pay, but the ceiling is also pretty set. So you don't have a lot of movement. And for me, it's not about the money, but I know that if I put in more work, I can deliver more value to people, which then, if the money was important, it would become
excellent,
a greater payout. So I think there's more specificity in what I can do that has direct impact on my day-to-day life, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Okay, that's good. That's really good. So can you tell us some stories? Now, you we touched on when you came against the culture's image or expectation of leadership, but I want us to think a little bit about, I know that you're a follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So can you think of any stories that when you came against the culture, and I guess I'm meaning the broader culture's image of being a leader, all right? Okay. Not just in one organization, and that of your own values of following Christ. And was there a difference? Is it all the same? Does it matter? Just curious of any stories about that.
Yeah. You know, and because I spent all of my career in Christian higher education, you know, I didn't encounter this in the same or in the most acute way, but I do remember at one point in my 20 plus years where somebody had told me, like, you need to be more out front. Like, you need to be more out front. Now, I mentioned earlier, I'm an introvert. I have no problem. I mean, I like public speaking. I like being in front of people, but it's what struck me odd about that comment was I thought, what does this have to do with any of the results that I'm driving or not driving? And at the time, because I'm a responsible employee, I thought, okay, I need to think about what this means. I need to grow. I need to learn. And the more I thought about it, I was like, I don't know if this is what the model leadership Christ has given me in my life.
That's good. So that was a cultural expectation.
Yeah. And so I thought, you know, I am much more wired towards what I would call servant leadership, which is how do I listen, and how do I focus on the fruits of the Spirit, and how do I empower those around me? And it's never been about me. It isn't supposed to be about me. Do I need to be viewed as the person that makes a decision on something? Sure, absolutely. But I don't need to be out front to do that. I can create trusted relationships and then that will drive my ability to deliver the results that I need to deliver. So that was a little bit jarring to me at one point in my career, because I thought, that's not my view of leadership, is being out front, whatever that meant. So that would be the one way I could think about it. And I've always, I think it's a Teddy Roosevelt quote, I've just always lived my leadership life this way of like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm-hmm. So my type of leadership is very relational. And so the idea of being out front, I was like, well, yes, but that's not going to accomplish what I think I need to accomplish. So I'm going to work on the relationships. And then when I need to be out front, I can be out front, but that's not the point.
And it's interesting to me that earlier on in this conversation, you mentioned that that's what you saw modeled by your parents mm-hmm. in a small church. Is that right? Or
My dad had a church about 115 he pastored.
And so, you know, I'm sure you've heard where people talked about that, what parents model for their kids is really the motivation behind what they're doing. That's what kids take with them. It's like, why are we doing this? And so can you just talk for just a quick moment of what you saw? Like, how did you see this modeling in your parents?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, my dad is super relational and was super sacrificial to the people in the church. And sometimes as a kid, I'm like, why are we always at church? Why is it always about church?
So you didn't resent it, Ryan?
What was that? No, you know, and I would say my parents, in some ways, now that I have two children and I know they had seven, I don't know how they did what they did, right? So they were at all my sporting events, they were at all my activities, but they were also very, very present and available for all the people in their church. So it's a mystery to me, honestly, but now that I have two kids and a job, I'm like, I don't understand that, but I think they were very intentional and sacrificial. Right. So, and you know, this might, maybe your listeners will appreciate this, but like, I've always thought like at the crux of leadership is the concept of love. Right. So if you don't love the people you're leading, then you're at some point you're going to be confronted with what's motivating me to do what I do. And so I saw my parents model a love for what they were doing because for the people they were leading. And that has always stuck with me, is if this ever becomes about me, then it's time to move on, probably, because that means I'm not focused on the right thing.
So you didn't go into these positions looking for your own significance in a sense, or looking for some great need to be loved. And so therefore that's why you didn't become the big person.
Yeah. And that's, you know, at times I used to think that was a weakness, that I didn't want that. Significance is very low, I believe, on my strengths finder.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm sure if I got all 32.
What's your highest strength?
Deliberative. And I've taken it 5 times. It's always number one.
I've never heard anyone have that one. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a blessing and a curse, as we all know, with all our strengths, but yeah. I felt like my significance, if I cared about significance, it was like, can I make an impact at the organization into the mission, but also into the lives of the people that I'm working with? So like when you talk about personal mission and like you go through an exercise of saying, what are the things that stick out to you from your journey that mean the most? It was like the people that work for me accomplishing great things. People getting, you know, named employees of the year and moving up into leadership roles they didn't think they could do and killing it. Those are the sort of things that I think have always motivated me. And I think that was the discovery I had early in my leadership and management journey was, wow, that stuff is so much better than a title, because a title means very, very little to anybody. So
Ryan, just for a moment, I have several emerging leaders, millennials, iGen listening.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stories you're telling are kind of hard to hear. You know, you've used the word sacrifice. You've used the word intentional, which isn't hard to hear, but we're in a hyper individualized culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hearing a lot of research that everyone's into the work-life balance, which you mentioned.
Yeah.
But what about those who aren't moving ahead because they're not sure they're ready to do the sacrificing you're talking about? What do you say to them? But they have the calling to lead.
Well, I mean, I think you know, as a believer, I would say, well, what do you think God gifted you with those callings for? Like, was it for you or was it for others? You know, and the idea that, and I think this is part of one of the cultural malaises that we're in right now, is the idea that like leadership is about me. And, you know, the concept of elder leadership, which is around, I can tend and care for a group or a community of people. Like, where is that gone? Mm-hmm. So I would say if you have a calling for leadership, determine the motivation for what you want to do with that leadership over the course of your journey. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not somebody that was like, in 20 years, I want to be able to do this, right? Here's what I want at my funeral to be said. But I always thought like, what would I want from somebody, like kind of the golden rule, like what would I want done to me as a follower? I'm going to do that to those people. And that's partly of what develops the organization, right? So I think there's a struggle between individualism right now and then and contributing to the organization. Well, what I would say is that if you just get outside of yourself and start contributing to others, then it will become for the organization. Because what is an organization? It's just a group of people working together on a thing. And I always tell people this, if you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go together. That is one of my mantras that I've had for years.
Say it again.
If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Mm. And I think we were built for collective work. Now, does that not mean I'm working in a garden shed in my backyard as one of three owners. So I left an organization, but I think it's like, can you contribute to something beyond yourself?
Yeah.
And if you're a believer, then like, what else is there to contribute to?
That's a great segue to the word support that I'm looking at right now for my doctoral research. It's such a sticking point for anyone who's leading, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want, again, our people to hear from you, you know, what direction should support come to a leader? From the top, from the sides? We certainly don't expect the people we're leading to be our primary supporters, right? Mm-hmm. But you, with all of your experience, you know, you've been in all these different positions. You've got kind of an interesting perspective. Who's offering the support?
Yeah, well, this is a big one. Well, I think first, you know, I'd look back to say, like, what are people want in leadership? You know, and this, the reason why I think this is important is, if you look at leadership, there's two perspectives. One would be from the leader's point of view, the other is from the people that are being led, right? And so, you know, I talked earlier about StrengthsFinder. Well, strength in leadership, there's that book talks about there's four components that people want in leadership: trust, compassion, stability, and hope. Okay, so when we talk about support, like, well, which one of those is support? Well, they're all support. Where does it come from? Well, it comes in different ways from different areas. What I would say is the hardest part about being an executive level leadership is oftentimes it moves you out of your peer group. So when every time I was promoted,
that's good,
the people I could talk to about things all of a sudden changed, right? Because one of the things as a leader is I can't necessarily tell everybody everything that's going on, because that compromises what they should and shouldn't know and my ability to lead them. So that's part of the struggle, I think, when you move into a position, if you don't have lateral support on your team and you're not getting it from your boss, then you have none of it. Now, can the people below you be doing good work? Absolutely. But is it the support that you probably need? No. So I would say one of the pieces of this, and there's studies about this, like if you have people that have a best friend at work are doing better work and are more likely to stick around. And I think Gallup did that research as well. What's interesting is I've wondered if you promote somebody out of a place where they have connections, now they're into a position where they're overseeing some of their former friends or things, you have to reestablish support and trust this way, but there's got to be a top down from your boss that says, I support you in your development. One of the misnomers with support, though, I would say, is that your boss can help you do your, they can't always train you to do your job well, right? Meaning, like in my job, when I was a VP of enrollment and marketing, the president didn't necessarily know how to be successful in my work. So I had to figure that part out, but it's the support. And I think support to me looks like, do you care? Are you listening? Are you developing the things in me that you see that need development, which is relational work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say trust is the word, you know, I mentioned this for trust, compassion, stability, hope.
Mm-hmm.
To me, trust is trust isn't a cornerstone of your culture, and this would be for the leader of an organization or for a unit, is if there's not enough trust, then people aren't gonna feel supported, period.
What breaks down trust?
Lack of relationship, saying one thing, doing another, a culture that supports, I'll take a step back. Oftentimes we talked about culture being attitudes and beliefs and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I always tell people, it's more about what you tolerate. So let's say I'm a leader and I say, hey, it's really important on our team that we do this. And the next day I don't do that.
Okay.
That breaks down trust immediately. And okay. So, or somebody does something and I say, that's really not what we're supposed to do. And then all of a sudden I don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is part of a cultural artifact that we're dealing with right now, is how do we create appropriate boundaries around behavior at work, behavior at home, behavior in schools.
Well, it's so interesting because it feels like you're talking about how to raise a good family.
Well,
just the things that you're saying.
Well, this is where I would actually go back and say, well, where was the heart of leadership for me planted? In my family, right? So, and I think family is a bedrock of developing a healthy view on culture and how we should treat others and how we should be treated. And for me, obviously, from a spiritual standpoint, what is God's role in all of that? And who is this for? Is it for me? Is it for others? That all came from my family.
Yeah.
And my faith, which came from my family.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty amazing statement to make in this day. So,
yeah. I think that's, to me, what, you know, you talk about what keeps you up at night. It's like, well, if the cathedrals of culture are the family, the church, and schools, as leaders and emerging leaders and future leaders, like how do we restore those cathedrals so that future leaders?
Suggestion?
Well, this is where I think leadership, it's all about leadership, right? And part of that would be to say, who are we? The motivation, going back to the comment about motivation, like what are we leading for and to what end? And leadership is not for the faint of heart, I always tell people, but when you get into it, there's a great obligation to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the right thing isn't always the popular thing.
Which is pretty hard in a culture that's marked by groupthink.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, nobody really wants to stand out and be that lone person. And one of the things that came up in my first discovery workshop was, could consensus be the new way that leaders are going to, you know, move forward, as opposed to being the one who stands out to do the right thing? But I mean, there's so many problems with that, right? How are you going to get everyone on the same page?
Yeah. And I think there's really good reason for us to think that way, right? Because like, the workplace is a multi-generational place, right? So like what might work for somebody who's sort of the tail end of their career and what might work for somebody who's at the front end, this is why we get a lot of research around Gen Z and baby boomers and all this. So it's partly my job as a leader. This is what I always tell people. It's leadership isn't about your style. It's about the style that works for the people you're working with.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Now, I have to understand my style, but I might need to adjust to work with somebody like you versus somebody like Johnny down the road. And I think part of what I would suggest people think about when they're leading is, when you're in a leadership position in an organization, you do have an obligation to the organization, right? And that's to try to drive certain results. You also have an obligation to the people who are entrusting their future to your development of them. So what you want to look for is, where is the overlap of those two objectives, and then live in that intersection. And that, I think, will get you beyond the generational gaps, because then, and again, if it's about relationships, I'll know, well, Pam's a little bit more like this. And so to help motivate her and to encourage her, I need to do this, versus for this person over there, I do this other thing.
But what I love about what you're saying is that in and of itself requires sacrifice of the self.
Yeah.
That requires, this is the way I do things. This is the way we're always going to do things. No, it's saying what is best for that person. And I'm going to sacrifice my own preferences for this.
Yeah. I mean, this is true. Like, so I said earlier in our company, we work on hiring. Like one of the greatest dangers in hiring is hiring somebody like yourself all the time. Right. We talk about that. You know, that's one of the many dangers in hiring, but it's one I see a lot because it's like, I know how to relate to myself. Well, that's why you end up with too much of a homogenous workplace and you don't get perspectives and the diversity of thought and opinion doesn't exist. So if we have more diverse workforces on gender and ethnicity and all those sort of things, like, wouldn't it be more important for us to actually understand how to motivate people who are different than ourselves? Yes, absolutely. And that's the leader's responsibility.
And that sounds like a kingdom perspective. That feels like, yes. That would be what sounds like if we're following Jesus and really hearing his voice.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right on.
So do you have a time maybe that you can talk about when you, I use this word sparingly, when you failed as a leader, or maybe you faced a dark time and considered walking away? I'm just curious, like, how'd you endure the struggle? You're still here, Ryan. You're still here and you're doing good work.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, I think there's definitely ebbs and flows in life. And I mean, I have probably more failures than I care to admit to your listeners. But I think, you know, I'm trying to think of a specific example. And at one point, I tried to do something that I thought was a really great idea. And it was around some messaging and I leveraged the relationships that I had, and it didn't go well. And it wasn't the biggest deal in the world, but it was actually pretty jarring to me in the sense that I wondered, like, what did I do here that didn't make sense? Why are people so agitated about things? And because I'm a relational person and also, you know, at one point in my life before management had harmony in my strength set, I was kind of like,
you don't have
how will I restore relationships? And I think the learning that I had in that is, A, like, we're never going to get it right all the time, right? And this is why reflection is so important. And it goes back to prioritization of time that we talked about earlier. Is like, most leaders I'm working with right now, they don't have enough time to get off the hamster wheel to think about what happened, yesterday, let alone a year ago. Mm-hmm. So for me, on that particular moment, I wanted to go back, and I've still been, I mean, I still revisit things like this. Okay, if I had that to do over again, what would I do differently? But did it drive out my desire to lead? Maybe in a short window, right? But I think when you feel like the Lord has gifted you with strengths and skills, and there's a need,
yeah,
that you have the match for, then it all, I have almost like a compulsion to step into that void, right? Which is partly why I left a very comfortable and stable vice president job for a company that we were starting and without understanding of what that would look like for my family over the long haul.
Why did you say that again? What was the reasoning behind that?
There's a need, and I have the giftings that I think could help fill some of that and contribute more broadly to what I was passionate about, which was advancing Christian higher education. Hmm. So it goes back to, when there's an area of need, you can find an opportunity to lead, right? And that is where people want fast track promotions. Well, the way to move through things is move to where your giftings line up with the opportunity, and then invest and then see what happens.
Hmm. So just talk a moment here, then. You, I've heard already that you are committed in your faith. So yeah. What does it look like when you're facing just even the story you told, to follow Jesus when the pressure's on? How is it any different than any leader at any company?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to stay relational. That's number one, right? You know, leaders are kind of like tea bags. You don't know what you got until you put them in hot water, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think from the relational side, sometimes what happens when we feel pressure is we close down and close off and go to work, especially those of us that are really task oriented like me. So in that example I gave, one of the things I had to do, that I chose to do, was I'm going to go talk to everybody that has a concern about this. And this happened earlier in my career when I was part of, there was a restructuring and some layoffs, and there were some people that whose jobs disappeared. And it was very hard on me because of the relational side of me. But I felt like if I can go and talk to each person, then I can listen and hear their concerns, but also be clear on what this is and what this isn't. And so I think when you think about the faith piece, it's like, I go back to the motivation, like, why am I in this? What am I doing this for? Well, it isn't just to gain, you know, a platform for my name or for myself or money. It's to actually help grow and empower people so we can move towards a compelling shared vision for our company. So you do that by staying relational and actually thinking the best of others.
That's good. Thinking the best of others.
And, you know, one of the things that when you get most under the gun, sometimes that really is a struggle, is you start to actually forget that other people are making choices out of their best interest or out of good intentions too. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's when culture has to actually support a behavior that is helpful to an organization weathering rocky times. Mm-hmm. This is what COVID, I think, actually was in terms of organizational things was important, because it forced us to actually deal with the reality is that our control isn't what we think it is. And we have to be able to work through hard things. And to do that, we have to be able to work together differently. So to me, I take that from my faith perspective, right? Is if I was here for me, I would just go do whatever I wanted to do.
Right.
And I wouldn't worry about how that made your life or you felt about it or whether I communicated it with you or not. I just have somebody send you a memo, right?
Yeah.
or a text or whatever we do nowadays.
That's good.
And I think for me, I've always felt like if I leave and hit a goal, but have all the relationships, there's like a, you know, it's burned ash behind me. What have I really done? That's not the way it should be if you're a Christ follower.
And yet I think many Christ follower leaders have found that to be their reality.
Yeah. And I think it's also easy to say, oh, well, then if you're a Christ follower, you shouldn't make any of the hard choices and do it. It's like, no. Like, you know, as a Christ follower, I also have to step into the role I've been entrusted with and shepherd the organization. This is, you know, my field, Christian higher ed. If you're a president in a Christian institution right now, you got to be making some strategic changes. Mm-hmm. And those changes are going to be hard, mm-hmm. you know, not complicated all the time, but hard, because they involve people. So I think it's important that leaders recognize that being in leadership does require hard choices. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that that's not Christian or not like Jesus-like. And so I would just encourage anybody making those hard choices to say, lead in the way that you believe Christ modeled for when we walk through hard things. Mm. And be consistent with that. And you know, those of the people that have worked with me for a long time would probably echo this, is the two most important things in my leadership have always been consistency and honesty.
Mm.
And I think when you have the opportunity, when things are hard, to show up in those ways, it shows people, it's like, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, we still behave the way that we said before. That's how you build a culture of trust, compassion, stability, and hope.
Well, I think that's great advice for anyone listening right there, is exactly what you just said, is to lead, make the hard choices. And I would say I'm very encouraged by listening to you, and I think it's true of the company you work for. Everyone's wholehearted, and when you lead with your whole heart, these issues that we're talking about are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's the beauty of being a wholehearted person. Mm-hmm. But I also, one last question for you. Let's just say that you're standing in front of a group of emerging leaders, right? And maybe they're hesitant of saying yes. And maybe the row behind them is a group of middle managers who are starting to burn out. And maybe behind them is the top leaders who are saying, it's time, I'm done. Okay. What's your advice to them?
Yeah, well, it's a loaded question for the last one. Well, My preface to that would be the first thing is middle managers can make the biggest changes. Okay. And I believe it's like exercise, you know, if its core is strong, things are good. So middle managers matter a ton. Sometimes I think middle managers feel the pinch. So I'd first say what you're doing matters. Like, and it matters probably more than you can even realize. I would also say people don't leave companies, they leave managers. So be the manager that people don't want to leave. And be the leader that you wish would have led you for the last 5 years, 10 years. And if I had a chance to talk individually with those people, I'd talk about motivation. Like, why do you believe God called you, gave you the gifts he gave you and put you in the position he put you for such a time as this? Because we have, we see leadership across, we hear this phrase, leadership crisis. We hear it everywhere, right? Yeah.
Right.
And I think we can see it. So if that's the problem, well, then what's the opportunity? Well, the opportunity is for those people who have the right vision of leadership, the God-given vision of leadership, which frankly, in my mind, is the only true vision of leadership. What if we step away, then what?
That's exactly right. And, and it makes me also think, then what's the point of Christ as being our high priest who sacrificed everything for us? He's waiting for us just to say, what can I do? I mean, what can I do for you? He's waiting for us to ask. And that's, to me, the hallmark of a Christian leader who relies on that.
Yeah.
So Ryan, how can my listeners get in touch with you if they would like to? Or
yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to talk with any burgeoning leaders out there. So our company is called TG3. That's TGTHREE. And we have a website, TG3.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn and you can find me through the website. I can set up an appointment even to talk with me through the website if you'd like. And I'd love to meet you and discuss life and leadership opportunities. But it's been a pleasure to talk with you, Pam. And I think from a leadership standpoint, when we talked about the cathedrals of culture, you know, family, church, and school, leadership is always the solution. Right. Because leadership is put us in the condition we're in, and what we can do is make a different choice. And I actually think this is where the role of the church in developing leaders is absolutely paramount.
And well, let's look for that opportunity then.
Yeah, there you go. And that's why my career, you know, I believe in education. And so I wanted to invest in those two, in the overlap of faith and education. So therefore Christian education. But yeah. So yeah, TG3.com would be the place. And, or you can email me at rdoherty@TG3.com.
Yep. And I will put that on the end of my podcast as well for listeners. Thank you, Ryan, for being here. It's awesome.
Thanks, Pam. Great to talk with you.
All right.